It is said he was replaced with a mechanical hermit, like the presidential hall at Disneyland. Would you really go see a fake hermit?
There are so many little-known fairy tales, folklore stories, and chapters of history to explore in this world. And so much of it is wackadoo! Unbelievable, disturbing, enthralling, mind-bending, and just plain weird. When I find these stories, they get stuck in my head, and I absolutely have to share them with someone. So I thought, why not share these with you? Welcome to Tail Wagging, a gleeful retelling of little-known fairy tales, folklore, history, and more. Hi, this is Tail Wagging, and it's going to be a solo episode today because on our wonderful Twitch stream the other night, even though we had a lot of fun, the audio did not come out perfectly. And that meant a couple of words here and there kind of got dropped, and I want to make sure you hear the whole story, so I'm actually re-recording this for you today. So feel really special because I love you. I want you to hear a really good story, even if that means Dan can't be here to react and be silly with me. So I have two stories for you today. This is for the very, very special isolation edition of Tail Wagging. And I thought this would be kind of a fun way to make light of things and give you a laugh and a smile. I've got a story from history about a time where people actually had hermits that would live in their garden. And then I'm going to follow up with a fairy tale about a maiden who got bricked up in a tower for 7 years, which is a real long time. We're going to talk about all of that, but let's start with fashionable hermits. So some people, even now, really like having a garden gnome. You know, just little elf-looking person. You put them in your garden. And it's kind of cute. And it seems like this idea kind of dates back to this era in the Georgian era of England, where having lavishly landscaped grounds was just, it was just not enough to impress. You had to be a little extra, and you needed an ornamental hermit. Hermits generally shun society and live in isolation to pursue higher spiritual enlightenment. Think Henry David Thoreau, if he was like a little bit more dedicated to it. And hermits have been part of the British landscape for centuries, but then they literally became part of their landscaping. I need like a sound effect there to just be like, ba-doom-tsh. French-style formal gardens were like these neatly trimmed lawns, elaborately shaped box hedges, and geometric gravel paths. But England, they wanted to pass on all these French ideas in favor of these serpentine paths that went past romantic lakes, rustic clumps of trees, artfully crumbling follies, which it turns out that's a decorative building that serves no practical purpose. I didn't know they had a special name, and now I know. And then you would place this picturesque hermitage constructed of brick or stone, maybe some gnarled tree roots and branches for effect. Shells and bones, perhaps, for atmosphere in your retreat. Having a resident hermit just quietly contemplating existence and occasionally sharing some golden nugget of wisdom with the visitors. This was just a must-have accessory. Wealthy estate owners would put ads in the paper offering food, lodging, and a stipend for those who were willing to adopt a life of solitude. They hired real people to dress as druids, grow their hair long, and not wash for years. And these hired hermits would lodge in shacks, caves, other rustic lodgings, and rambling gardens. This was mostly found in England, but it also made it to Scotland and Ireland too. And there's a whole book about it. The book is called The Hermit in the Garden, From Imperial Rome to Ornamental Gnome by Professor Gordon Campbell. Here's a quote. Recruiting a hermit wasn't always easy. Sometimes they were agricultural workers, and they were dressed in a costume, often a druid's costume. There was no agreement on how druids dressed, but in some cases they wore what we would call a dunce's cap. It's a most peculiar phenomenon. How having a live-in hermit became fashionable and trendy goes back to the Roman Emperor Hadrian, who had a villa in Tivoli, which had this small lake with a structure in it built for one person to retreat. It gradually verged away from religious people isolating themselves for spiritual reflection to hermiting being this 18th century profession for those willing to put up with stipulations. There was an ad, and it was put in this olden times version of Craigslist, and it said, "The hermit is never to leave the place or hold a conversation with anyone for 7 years, during which he is neither to wash himself or cleanse himself in any way whatsoever, but is to let his hair and nails, both on his hands and feet, grow as long as nature will permit them." Other people asked their hermit for hire not to wear shoes, and sometimes they were supposed to entertain guests at parties with personalized poetry or wine service. Like, really, can you imagine? Just, you've just got this hermit, they never clean themselves, and you need them to arrive shoeless at your party and maybe, like, provide a clever limerick while giving you advice on wine? I don't know. Wow, it's just a whole other thing. It was just this fascinating time in English history where melancholy was all the rage, introspection, somberness of spirit. All of these things were prized among the elite, and so their hermits have to embody this role too. And it was hard to hire a good hermit. One story had a hermit hired for 3 weeks before he was found at the local pub and fired. Another story, someone's brother posed as a hermit for effect. They couldn't afford one, so his brother just had to pretend. I found a description for seeing the resident hermit for the Hawkstone Estate in Shropshire. This dude was a pro. Listen to this. "You pull a bell and gain admittance. The hermit is generally in a sitting posture with a table before him, on which is a skull, the emblem of mortality, an hourglass, a book, and a pair of spectacles. The venerable barefooted father, whose name is Francis, if awake." Like, really, what's his name if he's asleep? Like, what? Anyway. "He always rises up at the approach of strangers. He seems about 90 years of age, yet has all his sense to admiration. He is tolerably conversant and far from being unpolite." I hope we can all someday aspire to be tolerably conversant. After visiting hours were over, the Hawkstone hermit was replaced with a mannequin. And after Father Francis died, it is said he was replaced with a mechanical hermit. They had an automatron. And he moved and was lifelike, but he got bad reviews. The reviews said it wasn't natural enough. If you couldn't afford a hermit, sometimes people would set up a lodging as if a hermit lived there, but maybe had just left the shelter to contemplate life in a field or something. It reminds me of, like, those little fairy gardens people like to build sometimes, as if, like, oh, fairy just stepped out for a second. Like, maybe collect some teeth. I don't know. And I learned that there is still one special hermit that lives high in the mountains in Austria. And they've had a lodging up there that has been occupied by one hermit at a time for 350 years. Right now, a man named Stan Van Utrecht lives there, and he beat out 50 people who applied for the job. So if you were thinking about going into hermitry, there's a little bit of competition for the job. This is a working hermit, and visitors are allowed to come enjoy spiritual conversation with the resident hermit. It's all very entertaining. I'm going to include some pictures that I found on social media if you guys want to check out what some of the hermits looked like, because they're pretty darn cool. And now I want to tell you my other story, because we've all heard about Rapunzel. When you think maiden in a tower, you think Rapunzel. But she's not the only one. She just has the best, like, agent or something. Because Maid Maleen I think Maybelline had it way harder, and I'm going to tell you about it. Once upon a time, two people fell in love, and other people interfered. The end. Well, that would be the short version, but I'm going to tell you the longer version that I did edit down because it was pretty long. This story actually begins with Maybelline, who was the daughter of a king. I don't know why she isn't called a princess, but that's her title. She and the prince of another kingdom fall in love. Her dad is not into it. He wanted to promise her to someone else, but she puts out an ultimatum. She says, "I can and will take no other for my husband." You know, as a parent, there's really only one option, which is fly off the handle. Dad goes nuts. The king flew into a passion and ordered a dark tower to be built into which no ray of sunlight or moonlight shall enter. I really hope she'll be able to breathe. When it was finished, he said, "Therein thou shalt be imprisoned for 7 years, and then I will come and see if thy perverse spirit is broken." Really? Perverse spirit? To want to marry the person you love? How dare you? Meat and drink for 7 years were carried into the tower. How does that stay good? Like, we talked about it on Twitch. Is it jerky? How do you keep meat and drink good for 7 years? Anyway, King does try to set her up with stuff for 7 years, and then she and her waiting woman, poor waiting woman, are led into the tower and walled up. They're cut off from the sky and from the earth. They sat in darkness and knew not when day or night began. And the king's son, her beloved, often went round and round the tower, calling out their names, but no sound from outside could pierce through the thick walls. Wow. That's heavy. That's really hard. Like, a situation with no light, you're probably going to the bathroom in the corner. Like, it's not great. It's not a great look. Time passed, and the food and drink were starting to run out, and they knew the 7 years were coming to an end. They waited for the king to come let them out. For anyone to come let them out. But no stroke of a hammer was heard. No stone fell out of the wall. And it seemed to Maybelline that her father had forgotten her. As they only had food for a short time longer and saw a miserable death awaiting them, Maybelline said, "We must try our last chance and see if we can break through the wall." Basically, we gotta do a Shawshank now. We probably don't even need a poster. There's no guards here. So she takes a bread knife and picked at the mortar of the stone. And when she was tired, the waiting maid would take her turn. So they tag team back and forth. And with great labor, they succeeded in getting out one stone. Then a second stone. And a third. And when the 3 days were over, a first ray of light fell on their darkness. And at last, the opening was so large, they could look out. The sky was blue. There's a fresh breeze for the first time in 7 years. Oh my gosh, they probably smelled so bad. But everything that had surrounded the tower had changed. Her father's castle lay in ruins. The town and the villages had been destroyed by fire. Fields far and wide had laid to waste, and no human being was visible. I feel like some karma came back for the king. When the opening in the wall was large enough for them to slip through, the waiting maid sprang down first, and then Maybelline followed. But where are they supposed to go? There must have been this war, and an enemy had ravaged the whole kingdom, driven away the king, and slain all the inhabitants. So they wandered for days to seek out another country. But they couldn't find shelter, or even a person, to give them a mouthful of bread, and their need was so great, they were forced to appease their hunger with nettles, which it turns out is a common plant with sharp hairs on it, and it sounds really unappetizing. After much, much more long journeying, they finally came to another country and tried to get work everywhere, but everywhere they knocked, they were turned away. No one would have pity on them. And at last they arrived in a large city and went to the royal palace, where they were again ordered to go away, but a cook finally said, you can stay in the kitchen and be scullions. That'd be fine. Coincidentally, because it's a fairy tale, the son of the king, whose kingdom they were in now, was none other than the man who had been betrothed to Maid Maleen at the beginning of the story. It has been 7 years, so his father chose another bride for him. And the story gets really judgy here and sets up some things. I'll talk about it later, my opinions of those things. For now, I'll just tell you what happened. The bride that he is engaged to, whose face was as ugly as her heart was wicked. Wow, epic. The wedding date was set, the maiden had arrived, but because of her great, great, epic ugliness, she shut herself in her room and no one was allowed to see her. And it was Maid Maleen who brought her meals from the kitchen. When the day came for the bride and groom to go to the church for the wedding, she was ashamed of her ugliness and afraid if she showed herself in the streets, she would be mocked and laughed at by the people. And she told Maid Maleen, "A great piece of luck has befallen thee. I have sprained my foot. Can't walk through these cobblestone streets. I need you to put on my wedding dress and take my place. This is a great honor for you." Maid Maleen said, "I wish for no honor that is not suitable for me." The bride offered her gold. Still, she was turned down. Finally, she said angrily, "If thou dost not obey me, it shall cost thee thy life. I have but to speak the word, and thy head will lie at thy feet." Yeah, that's how she talks, I think. Maid Maleen was forced to obey and put on the bride's magnificent clothes and all her jewels. And when she entered the royal hall, everyone was amazed at her great beauty. The king said to his son, "Hey, check it out. This is the bride I chose for thee. Nice." The groom was astonished and thought, "She's like my Maid Maleen, and I should believe it was she herself, but she has long been shut up in a tower or dead." He took her by the hand and led her to church. On the way, they saw a nettle plant. And this is where Maid Maleen gets really weird and her hermit life starts to show. She says, "Oh, nettle plant, little nettle plant, what dost thou here alone? I have known the time when I ate thee unboiled, when I ate thee unroasted." "What?" asked the king's son. "Nothing," she replied. "I was only thinking of Maid Maleen." He was surprised she knew about her, but kept quiet. And when they came to a footplank to get into the churchyard, she said, "Footbridge, do not break. I am not the true bride." "What are you talking about?" asked the king's son. "Nothing," she replied. "I was only thinking of a Maid Maleen." "Dost thou know Maid Maleen?" "No," she answered. "How should I know her? I have only heard of her. She's probably really attractive." When they came to the church door, she got weird again and said, "Church door, break not. I am not the true bride." "Why are you saying weird stuff?" asked the prince. "Oh," she answered, "I was only thinking of Maid Maleen." The prince took out a precious chain and put it around her neck and fastened the clasp. They entered the church. The priest joined their hands. They got married. That part, we just breeze right by it. He takes her home. She doesn't speak the whole way. Thank goodness. I can't take any more bad poetry. And when they got back to the royal palace, she hurried into the bride's chamber, took off all the magnificent clothes and jewels, dressed herself in an ugly gray gown, and kept nothing but the jewel on her neck, which she had received from the groom. When night came, the original bride was led into the prince's apartment, and she let her veil fall over her face, that he might not observe the deception. As soon as everybody left, he said to her, "What did you say to the nettle plant that was growing on the side of the road?" "To which nettle plant?" asked she. "I don't talk to nettle plants." "Well, if thou didn't do it, you're not the true bride," She thought to herself and said, I must go to my maid who keeps my thoughts for me. She went out and sought Maid Maline. This is why I think this character has an accent. This is a direct quote. I didn't mess with it at all. Girl, what hast thou been saying to the nettle? Maid Maline said, I said nothing but... Oh, nettle plant, little nettle plant, what dost thou here alone? I have known the time when I ate thee unboiled, when I ate thee unroasted. The bride ran back to the chamber while she could still remember it and said, I know now what I said to the nettle. And she repeated the sad plant poem, which she had just heard. And the king's son said, but what did you say to the footbridge when we went over it? And she hasn't taken the hint yet, so she says to the footbridge, I don't talk to footbridges. Then thou art not the true bride. She said, let me go check with my maid who keeps my thoughts for me. Ran and found Maid Maline. Girl, what didst thou say to the footbridge? And Maid Maline says what she said, and the bride gets super mad, but she runs back into the room and repeats it again. And they go through the same thing with the church door, where he keeps threatening, like, well, you're not the true bride if you don't know. And she needs to go get her thoughts from her maid. And then the final question. The king's son asks, but where is the jewel which I gave you at the church door? What jewel? Thou didst not give me any jewel. I myself put it round thy neck. I myself fastened it. If you dost not now know that, thou art not the true bride. He drew the veil from her face, and when he saw her immeasurable ugliness, he sprang back terrified and said, how comest thou here? Who art thou? I am thy betrothed bride. But because I feared lest the people should mock me when they saw me out of doors, I commanded the scullery maid to dress herself in my clothes and go to church instead of me. He says, where's the girl? I want to see her. Go and bring her here. The bride goes and tells the servants, the scullery maid is an impostor. Take her out to the courtyard and strike off her head. The servants laid hold of Maid Maline and wanted to drag her out, and she screamed so loudly for help that the king's son heard her voice and hurried out of his chamber and ordered them to set the maiden free instantly. Lights were brought, and then he saw on her neck the gold chain he had given her at the church door. Thou art the true bride, who went with me to the church, who talked to plants and footbridges and church doors and was super weird. Come with me to my room. When they were alone, he said, on the way to church, you talked about Maid Maline a lot. And I used to be engaged to her. And if I could believe it was possible, I would think she was standing before me. You're like her in every way. And she said, I am Maid Maline, who for thy sake, that's a guilt trip, was imprisoned 7 years in the darkness, who suffered hunger and thirst, who has lived so long in want and poverty. Today, however, the sun is shining on me once more. I was married to thee in the church, and I am thy lawful wife. Then they kissed each other and were happy all the days of their lives. And the poor ugly girl got her head cut off, and it sucked. And the tower in which Maid Maline had been imprisoned remained standing for a long time, and children passed by and sang. I don't know how the song goes, so I'll just read it like a poem. Cling, clang, Gloria, who sits within this tower? A king's daughter, she sits within. A sight of her I cannot win. The wall it will not break. The stone cannot be pierced. Little Hans, with your coat so gray, follow me, fast as you may. I don't know who Hans is, but I have to assume he's a hedgehog, based on our previous episode. So, those are our stories for this week. The thing I want to comment on is, I know it's a plot device that this bride has to be apparently physically deformed in some way to not go to the church so that they can set up this whole situation. And the only way that that's not mean is to say that she's also wicked and is threatening to kill people all the time. I still think the whole thing's kind of a bad rap. And it's pretty rough for that character. And she never gets a name. Actually, the only character in the story that gets a name is Maid Maleen. But I guess I am happy that the two who wanted to be together in the first place found each other. And it just seems unfair that the other bride got her head cut off because all she did was, I don't know, be shy. So this has been Tail Wagging. Thank you for listening, Tail Waggers. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with a friend. And I will see you next week on this podcast feed. And if you want to join us for live storytelling on Twitch, go ahead and check out the channel. And I'll see you on Friday. Bye. Thank you for listening to Tail Wagging. If you'd like to send in a story idea, email us at tailwaggingpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter at Tail Wagging Pod. That's TaleWaggingPod. We started a Twitch channel where you can watch the storytelling live at twitch.tv/JackieBauerTV and a YouTube channel. Links to both are in the show notes. We'd really love it if you could take a moment to please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast anywhere you can. It really helps us get found on this new adventure. If you enjoyed this episode, share it with a friend, tweet about it on the interwebs, or send a raven. And if you are under an evil enchantment or have been transformed into a creature of some kind, I can't promise that listening to the next episode will turn you back, but it might. This is Tail Wagging. May all your dreams come true.